CKUW.ca. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us, and stay tuned. CKUW is managed by the Winnipeg Campus Community Radio Society in accordance with CRTC and Industry Canada rules and regulations. As a not-for-profit radio station, CKUW is a member of the National Campus Community Radio Association and adheres to their statement of principles to provide an alternative voice. CKUW operates on a frequency of 95.9 MHz on the FM band with 450 watts effective radiated power, or ERP. Our transmitter is located at 7 Evergreen Place in Osborne Village. Programming originates from our downtown studios at the University of Winnipeg in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. We would like to hear from you and welcome your ideas to improve listening, which will be heard on CKUW in years to come. Address your comments and suggestions to CKUW 95.9 FM, Room 4CM11, 515 Portage Avenue, Winnipeg, Manitoba, R3B2E9. You can call 204-786-9782 or email us at ckuw@uwinnipeg.ca. This is Victoria King speaking for the Board of Directors, staff, and volunteers of CKUW 95.9 FM. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for more great community radio.
The name of this poem is Alternate Universe in Which Michael B. Jordan Proposes, or Alternate Universe in Which I Accept His Hand in Marriage, or The Amount of Times I've Heard He Only Likes White Women, So I'll Never Stand a Chance Anyway. And ain't that what y'all tell all single black women who have ever dreamed of love? The ones who have listed out their bridesmaids while the groom is still an eligible bachelor. Sometimes I wonder if it'll ever play out for me the way we see it on the big screen. And then I remember that would make me just a character. For all the times I've lent my limbs to men who bank on my appearance behind the scenes, I am just an audition. This is just the break room. We are just based on a true story, where your bedroom is my premise to our future, where my heart becomes tangled in your award-winning performance, especially the night I found out you had a girlfriend. When time after time I have just been plotlined to your climax, how foolish of me to think I could be bride in your bedsheets, find love in the phone calls and text messages and conversations over dinner after the movie, where this is the backstory and I did not make the cut nor the blooper. I have believed far too often I am not worthy of lead role. I am one of 77% black women in America who will be without spouse, who will be editing the man of their dreams for years before our names vanish from the credits of their story, where they will pick apart our pain in high definition before giving cue to exit frame, where I will be understudy before I am actress, star of the segment that supports the growth but never the garden, when all the while the bouquet has been picked for the wedding. This was just rehearsal. This was just soundtrack to the alternate ending. The name of this poem is Someone Will Hear It and Ask Later On Who Hurt Me, or all of the black women searching for love will find the men they deserve. Comedy. Y'all can laugh.
Well, Johnny be fair and Johnny be fine and wants me for to wed. And I would marry Johnny, but my father up and said, I'm sad to tell you, daughter, what your mother never knew. But Johnny is a son of mine, and so he's kin to you. Well, Jimmy be fair and Jimmy be fine and wants me for to wed. And I would marry Jimmy, but my father up and said, I'm sad to tell your daughter what your mother never knew. But Jimmy too is a son of mine, and so he's kin to you. Well, Billy be fair and Billy be fine and wants me for to wed. And I would marry Billy, but my father up and said, I'm sad to tell your daughter what your mother never knew. But Billy too is a son of mine, and so he's kin to you. You never seen a girl so sad and sorry as I was. The boys in town are all my kin, and my father is the cause. If life should thus continue, I should die a single miss. And so I'll go to mother and complain to her of this.
gonna pray, and I pray for a day like today, bright and shining. Super glory, everyone with a flag and a smile on their face. Bloody daddy of every creed and race, Lord. Phenomenal, love the atmosphere.
The party started. High 1540 Avenue, University of Winnipeg, 4.5 floor, Centennial Manitoba Hall. Look out, we're coming hard. Here's your last week with Prince Ugone, Princess Jim Sulem, Queen Victoria, Dr. T, and John, who's here but never here. Sometimes here, Princess Rachel, but always here at this time, Princess Katrine, making sure that we come clean. And we can be. Look out. Look out.
Manuela, and you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, and the radio show name is called Fantastic Friday. Please come and join us every single Friday morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. every Friday morning.
$75 million for rural water and wastewater infrastructure projects.
This is really about the cost of living, right? The more that we can build infrastructure in your communities, the more affordable life is going to be for your ratepayers.
The money is being spread out among five regional projects. It includes $22 million for the Pembina Valley Water Co-op Capital Plan, $44 million for water and wastewater upgrades in southeast Manitoba, and $4.5 million for a sewer line from Morden to Winkler. The province says upgrading this critical infrastructure will help the rural communities grow.
Some big, big projects need to get done, not only to add to the housing stock, but to add to our economy. And when we look at what's going on with the guy down south, Trump and the tariffs, we're starting to see the impacts on our economy. So we need to build, and we need to build up Manitoba's economy to withstand those pressures.
Jim Funk, the Reeve of Hanover, says with construction costs rising every year, the financial support will keep the project on track and ensure shovels are in the ground next year.
Hey everyone, I'm Jess Turner. Make sure you listen to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9 FM every Friday morning, 6 a.m. till 8 a.m. That's way too early for me. Okay, thanks. Bye.
And some of the tunes you will hear today is in respect of his contribution to music on the whole and to reggae especially. Wanting love in our lives.
Don't look so sad. I know it's so bad. But life goes on. And this world keeps on turning. Let's just be glad we had this time to spend together. There is no need to watch the bridges that we're burning.
Lay your head
on my pillow, sweet babe. Hold your warm
and tender body
close to. The whisper of the raindrops is blowing softly against my window all in the night.
Make believe
you love me.
Make believe
one more time.
Don't look so sad. I know it's over.
Different style, same emotion.
But life goes on, and this whole world will keep on turning. Let's just be glad we had some time to spend together. There's no need to watch the bridges that we're burning. Lay your head on my pillow. Hold your warm and tender body close to mine. Hear the whisper of the raindrops blowing soft against the window, and make believe you love me one more time.
Hi, I'm Julian Cooper. You're listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. This is my favorite morning wake-up show.
Thank you. Listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM. Ka-chow.
For my city dwellers, my storytellers, my soundscapers, music makers, and my dreamers of dreams. This is for the beat layers, the street sayers, the graph writers, and the painters. This is for the crate keepers, the image freezers, the lens seekers, and the photogs. This is for the spinners, the rewinders, drop the needle, pull it back, and come againers. This is for the movers, the body users, the kinetic acrobatic defying gravity provers. This is for the filmmakers, the actors, the activators, my sculptors, and my cans, sprayers. This is for the da-da-dubbers, the dancers, the scribers, the scholars. This is for the freestylers, my improvisers, my poetical, lyrical, spiritual vocalizers. This is for my speechifiers, for the visionaries, for the bridge builders, the chain breakers, the power takers. This is for the door crashers, my drum beaters, the call to action taker to the streeters. For my behind the sceners, my planners, my finders, our on task and right on timers. For our organizers, our survivors, our motivators, and our strivers. This is for the uplifters and our uprisers. This is for you, our ancestors. This is for you, our people blessers, our children, for our vision, for our villages, our hoods, our nations, our truths. This is for our culture, for our generation. This is for our creator and our creation. This is for our inner being and our outer, for our say it louder, big and prouder. This is for the art, for the word. This is for the sound. This is for the power.
Don't you listen? I'm Dale Rufus, and you're listening to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9, my favorite Friday morning wake-up show.
They are spread red carpet. One thing we have to tell all of us, so watch ya. Adam Rossing, watch me now. It name, murder me wrote and me no take back me chat. Shuffle the date, me and the queen in a day park. Look how me cute and sexy like that. And me plant the con, so no better watch that. Show me step up in a life, them waffy.
Hi everyone, my name is Belaine Osman. I'm a student here at the U of W. My students actually call me Madame Oz. Just letting you know, CKUW has an awesome show called Fantastic Friday, and you guys should listen to it. Stay tuned.
Well, here it is. Yeah, he coming. Tell them, Ita.
Think you where you come from. As long as you're a black man.
A black woman or a black child. You can't hide.
No mind your nationality. You have got the identity.
And perspicacity. Tell them, man.
Cause if you come from Clarendon,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Portland,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Westmoreland,
it really don't matter. Because coming to you all the way from Africa, in the country called Nigeria,
so
the brother called Prince Bone, to give you news and views from and about Africa. Look out, Prince Bone.
Good morning, Africa, and good morning to all of our listeners. Unukedu Kekwanu, greetings from Africa. Our first piece is from the Mkwasi Now, where Sarah Leah Whitson, executive director of Dawn, an organization founded by Khashoggi in 2018, talks about Trump's main motivation for cozying up to Saudi Arabia.
Well, the new UN Security Council resolution is exactly the problem that we're trying to solve, which is this failed approach to actually come up with a plan to address the real problem for Israel-Palestine, and that is Israel's illegal occupation and apartheid rule. These piecemeal efforts that treat Gaza as a separate, distinct problem, that treat the problem as Palestinians and how to rule over them, is never going to succeed. And we all know that the two-state solution process proposed by the Oslo agreements have failed. And in this void, we have the ability of Israel to maintain its permanent occupation, its permanent state of war. So what my book with Michael Omerman attempts to do is to come up with a new plan, a new blueprint for how to bring peace and security to Israel-Palestine. It includes the establishment of a transitional government, and obviously we're far away off from Israelis agreeing to that. But a transitional government with the priority of ending Israeli occupation and apartheid and creating a ground of democratic rule between the river and the sea in Israel-Palestine that will allow the people who live there to democratically decide, as they should in anywhere on the planet, what they want their future governance to look like. But it prioritizes ending Israeli crimes of occupation and apartheid ahead of the secondary questions of governance. And it demands that those questions of governance, whether there should be one state or two states, binational, confederation, should only be resolved by the people who actually live in the territory of Israel-Palestine. Well, the fact of apartheid in Israel-Palestine is really the starting point of our book. We recognize that there is a one-state reality. Numerous writers have described the one-state reality, which is an apartheid reality, which is Israel as the sovereign, ruling in a fashion that constitutes apartheid. Now, this is the conclusion that has been reached by nearly every human rights organization that works on the matter, legal experts that work on the matter. And that is the problem we're trying to end. The International Court of Justice has concluded last year that Israel's occupation is illegal and must come to an end. The UN General Assembly passed a resolution overwhelmingly in support of a resolution that called on Israel to end its illegal occupation immediately, gave Israel a deadline of September 2025, which it has breached, to end its occupation and remove its settlers from occupied territory. So the central problem that we have is that Israel continues to operate its illegal occupation and it by apartheid rule. Now, since the past 2 years, we've added to that the genocidal slaughter in Gaza.
Our next one comes from Democracy Now! With journalist Anand Gradas, who is an author of Winners Take All, The Light Charade of Changing the World. And he recently wrote about the Epstein emails for the New York Times opinion section. Stay tuned.
Look, there is no doubt that at the beating dark heart of this story is one monstrous man in Jeffrey Epstein, who did monstrous things, as Virginia was very bravely talking about there. But I think there's a lot of powerful people in this country who would like the story to begin and end with one monstrous man. And when these emails were released, I decided, maybe against my better judgment, that I was going to read all of them. And it took me 4 or 5 days just going through one after another, making notes. And I was really curious about all these other people, right? And some of them are celebrities and bold-faced names, like she was talking about. Some of them are utterly ordinary people no one's ever heard of. Some of them are professors, others. But I was interested in this larger network because these were the people that Jeffrey Epstein had, in effect, chosen to rehabilitate him socially and redeem him after he was a convicted sex offender trying to reestablish himself in society. And I was trying to understand how these relationships worked. And what I found was that it's very convenient for the American power elite to think about this as a story of one depraved man. But in fact, what the emails show, if you actually read them, is that he had chosen this particular kind of social network, this American power elite, because he could be sure that it would be able to look away at what he did, because it was very gifted at looking away over a generation at so much else, so much else, so much other abuse and suffering, whether the economic crises members of that network often helped cause, the wars members of that network helped push fraudulently, the pain of technological obsolescence that members of that network pushed on the American public. So this was a group of people well chosen by Jeffrey Epstein, because this American power elite, these circles that he moved in, if they have any superpower, it is the ability to hear the cries of people without power and close their ears.
Next, also from the Democrats now, Brandon Wu, Director of Policy and Campaigns at ActionAid USA. And we also talked to Jonathan Watts, Global Environment Writer at The Guardian. They talk about the global negotiations at the annual UN Climate Summit, which ended Saturday in Belém, Brazil, with a watered-down agreement that does not even mention fossil fuels. Stay tuned for that.
The first thing I would say is that it's not as bad as I expected. I had the lowest of expectations, which were almost realized. This COP conference came perilously close to breaking down. And if this had broken down, then the whole Paris Agreement that's put in place 10 years ago could have collapsed. So this was a very dangerous moment. And I don't think we can understand what happened in Belém without looking at the terrible, terrible geopolitical situation. The absence of the United States was critical. The United States, of course, is the world's biggest historical emitter and the richest country. The one that in past conferences has leaned on countries like Saudi Arabia to be a bit more giving. It wasn't there. And President Donald Trump has been openly hostile to the whole multilateral global environmental governance system. Then you have the wars. Then you have the fact that Europe is rearming. So in this context, I think it's amazing that anything came out of this. Your summary is excellent, that this conference didn't get anywhere near close enough to where we need to be going to keep global warming to a reasonably safe level of 1.5C. All the scientists I talked to here, and that was something new about this conference, bringing in more scientists as well as more indigenous people, all the scientists here were incredibly alarmed. We're approaching a number of tipping points with regards to the Amazon rainforest, with regards to Atlantic currents, and so forth. So yes, that's frustrating, but that's not new. Last year was a very similar outcome. This year, I think there was, it's really disappointing there was no mention of fossil fuels, but Saudi Arabia just said really clearly, if you talk about a roadmap and transition, these talks are going to collapse. So it just wasn't on the table. But what we did see was the start of a new just transition mechanism, a tripling of funds, adaptation funds for developing countries, and more than anything else, a kind of a radicalism that's come into the talks that wasn't there before. It was there on the streets for the first time in 4 years. Civil society was out in force, amazing color, dynamism, flotillas in the bay, tens of thousands of people in the streets, more indigenous people in the conference than ever before. That was incredibly encouraging. So was the fact that, as you mentioned, Colombia and a group of other high ambition nations have decided to go it alone and create a parallel series of conferences for a just transition away from fossil fuels. That's really going on the offensive. And then finally, kind of in the background of all of this was China and what's happening in China with its fossil fuel shift away from fossil fuels, incredible ramp up of wind, solar, electric cars that is transforming the world, despite what the talks do or achieve or don't achieve. It's absolutely incredible how fast things are moving in that area. So it seems from where I'm sitting, that the United States under Donald Trump is trying to go backwards to the 20th century and a fossil fuel era, whereas a huge part of the rest of the world wants to move forward into something else. So, yes, I wish there was much, much more on the table here. But given everything that's happening in the world right now, the whole process lives to fight another day.
In our next piece, we talked to Leonard Peltier, who, even though he has been released from prison, still feels he's trapped within the system. Stay tuned.
My name is, English name is Leonard Peltier. I'm 81 years old as of yesterday. My father is a Chippewa Cree from this reservation, this nation right here. I keep saying reservations because they were we was taught from childhood that we are all reservations, we're Indians, and we're not Indians. And this is not a reservation. We made treaties with the United States government, and the Constitution says they shall only make treaties with sovereign nations. So we're sovereign nations. We're not Indians, as they claim to be, as they claim we are. And my mother's from Fort Totten, but again, that's not the real name. The real name is Spirit Lake. And that's of the Lakota, Dakota people. I was raised majority of my life here with my grandparents, which is usually the traditional way of my people. The grandparents will take the children and raise them. But when Grandpa died, Grandma had no way to support us. So she went to the agency here to ask for help. And in retaliation, they took us and put us in a boarding school.
What boarding school?
Wapton, North Dakota, 1953. I was there till 1950 for 3 years, 56. And it was extremely brutal conditions.
How old were you?
I was 9 then when I went. And
talk about the point of these boarding schools. Was your hair cut? Did they stop you from speaking your language?
They did. That was the purpose of the schools, is to take the Indian out of the Indian, is what they literally, was the order. It took us to the boarding schools. The first thing they did was cut all our buzz cut, our hair, took it all off, and then we put us and took us into the shower. We showered and we come out of the shower, and we reported all over our bodies DDT. As you know, that's poisonous.
They poured DDT over your body?
DDT with other cans on your head and the whole body. And then they give us an issue of clothes, bedding, and assigned us to a bed. And that was the beginning of our treatment. It was extremely, extremely strict school. And beatings were regular for any little violation of those rules. I might have been a little hot-headed, I don't know. But when I first got there, there was a group, they called themselves the Resistors. And I immediately joined them, and I became part of the Resistors. So we would sneak behind the gymnasium, and we would talk our language. We would sing some song, even do some prayers. Yeah. And if we got caught, we got the beat out of us.
You wrote in your book, Prison Writings, My Life is My Sundance, that you consider these boarding schools your first imprisonment.
Yes, it was. I found the rules more restrictive than when I went to end up in prison.
So you go to this residential school with your cousin and sister for 3 years. Where do you come back to? And how did you maintain your language and your culture?
Well, I came back here to live with my father. And they were still living in log cabins. No electricity, no running water. We had to haul water, we had to haul wood. And We only had $55 to live on, which was my father's World War II military benefits. And that's what we had to live on. And we were facing the time of termination. The United States government wrote a bill passed by Congress, signed by the president, of termination. In 1956, it was supposed to be completed by 1985. And the first one to be terminated was the Menominee Indians of Wisconsin. They had millions of prime land, timber, and lakes to make hunting lodges and other things out there. It was beautiful, which they did today. They got it, all those things out there today. But they came and took all that land from them. Then they come here in 1958. Was it 58? Yeah, 58. I was 13 years old then. And they came and told us, we have been terminated and we have to accept it. We were supposed to be the second reservation to be terminated.
Next, we go to Black Agenda Radio. We speak with Glenn Ford, who provided his analysis of a Democratic Party presidential debate, in which even progressives were prepared to support Trump's regime change plans. Stay tuned for that.
In the last Democratic debate, all the candidates on stage showed themselves to be hopeless supporters of American exceptionalism, the doctrine that justifies endless U.S. imperial, military, and economic warfare around the globe. The right-wing Univision correspondent Jorge Ramos challenged Senator Bernie Sanders to condemn Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro as a dictator. Sanders quickly obliged him, declaring that anybody who does what Maduro does is a vicious tyrant. Candidate Julian Castro, the former Obama Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, chimed in, saying, "I'll call Maduro a dictator," and then proceeded to call for continued pressure on Venezuela, a clear endorsement of the catastrophic U.S. economic blockade that has killed at least 40,000 sick Venezuelans who've been cut off from access to needed medicine. Not one Democrat on the stage in Houston objected to Washington's economic warfare and constant subversion and military threats against Venezuela. Only one Democratic elected official running for president opposes the U.S. sanctions that have crippled Venezuela's economy, and she wasn't allowed in the debate. Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard opposes U.S. regime change wars around the world and vows to end them if she becomes president. That's why Gabbard has been blacklisted by the corporate media and ostracized by the Democratic Party. Imperialism is sacred to the two corporate parties and their media. The right-wing journalist from Univision, a huge media corporation, cited a United Nations Human Rights Commission report that claimed thousands have been disappeared, tortured, and killed by government forces in Venezuela. It should be noted that the previous UN Special Rapporteur for Venezuela disagreed, calling the report an unprofessional, one-sided political pamphlet, not an objective analysis of what's going on in Venezuela.
And finally, us from Black Agenda Radio, we speak with two lead organizers of the effort, Stephen Bernard of the People's Organization for Progress and Zayed Muhammad of the Malcolm X Commemoration Committee and New Jersey Committees for Accountable Policy, the March for Mumia.
Tell us about the importance of this March for Mumia.
For several reasons. First is that, Johanna Fernandez, who's been a fixture at WBAI, once referred to how Mumia has been medically mistreated as the sickening of Mumia. Over the last 10 years or so, he has had bout after bout of medical neglect that has almost taken him out of here several times, and most recently has almost cost him his sight. And it's only because we have this long-standing network and international movement of support for him that he's gotten any semblance of any medical care that he has gotten. That's the short answer to that. The second answer is that the courts say that there are no longer any legal options for him to petition for his freedom. We cannot accept that because he's an innocent man who does not deserve to be in prison at all, not to mention having been there for 43 years. So we are doing all that we can and all that we have done over the years by way of protests and raising hell to create the conditions for this court system to do what it's decreed to do on paper to finally do for Mumia. One of the black reporters who has been on Mumia's case from the beginning, we have this notion known as American exceptionalism, how America seems to try to make itself to be the exception from other northern former colonial powers in its facade with democracy. Lynn Washington talks about Mumia exceptionalism. There are a number of cases that have been through both state court and the federal courts that clearly give precedent for all the reasons why Mumia should be released on the merits of the law and the merits of his case in terms of its evidence. But because of this exceptional obstacle that is the state itself, they will not let that happen. So we're trying to create a new set of conditions to defy Mumia exceptionalism. So it's both medical and it's legal by virtue of what we have to do politically to change the diet legally for him.
And Stephen Bernhardt, how long is this march? It begins November 28th. It's scheduled to end December 9th. That's 11 days. What is the distance of this march?
The distance is 103 miles. It'll be covered over 12 days. Every morning we'll start walking at 10. We have some events planned at the way. We're going to have a press conference at the Berks County Courthouse in Reading and another press conference at Schuylkill County Courthouse in Pottsville. But generally, we'll be marching between 7 and there's one long day of 12 miles a day. People can join any day of the march, every day of the march, or they can start off with us in the morning and do a half day. If they feel they can only do 2-3 miles, there'll be opportunities for that. Everything is up on the website. It's marchformumia.org, either the word or the number, both will link to that. And that lays out maps, starting times, events, resources to learn more about Mumia in his own words, as well as the UN report on the fact that Mumia didn't get a fair trial. There's also the Amnesty International report. You could say we're going to be on the move.
Yeah, those were all of our pieces from them Kosinam and from Black Agenda Radio. You're still listening to Fantastic Friday on CKW95.9 FM. And right now we are going to move over to Ibrahim to give us an update about Sudan. Good morning, Ibrahim. Give me 1 second, let me try that again. Good morning, Ibrahim. How are you today?
Yes, I'm fine. How are you guys today?
We are doing well.
Oh, that's great. Nice morning.
Yes, yes, indeed. A bit cold, but no worries regardless. Can you please give us an update on Sudan?
Yeah, thank you for this opportunity, and thank you for Fantastic Friday. Yeah, Sudan is still there in the East Africa, and Sudan is still in the problem. But yes, I spoke with some of the relatives and some friends on the ground, and that's who are the grassroots and always talking about what is going on in Darfur, especially since the